Hey everybody, you're listening to Bluegrass Bios here on 93.9 WLXU LPFM Lexington Community Radio, coming to you live from the north side of Lexington, Kentucky, up in the beautiful 100 plus year old STEAM Academy, now known, or formerly known as Johnson Elementary. My name is Chuck, and I'll be with you here for the next hour and another hour, bringing you some interviews with people doing remarkable work here in the state of Kentucky. And joining us in the studio are two special guests. Would you like to introduce yourselves?
Bridget Blum-Ramsey with the Pritchard Committee for Academic Excellence.
Michael Andrews, also with the committee.
Great. Well, thank you all very much for coming in. And, you know, I think right now in Kentucky, there's a whole lot of discussion going on about education and public education and what's good and what's bad. But I want to start from the very beginning. So, Bridget, would you mind telling us, where were you born? Where are you originally from?
Sure. So I was born in Fort Knox, Kentucky, at Ireland Army Hospital. Oh, wow. My dad was in the service. So proud birth there at Ireland Army Hospital. Nice. And my parents are both from Northern Kentucky, but they chose to raise me and my siblings across the river, much to my grandfather's dismay, in Cincinnati, in a diverse neighborhood that at the time was predominantly Jewish, becoming more and more African-American. So it was a wonderful neighborhood, wonderful, diverse neighborhood to grow up in.
And what neighborhood was that?
The neighborhood was called Roselawn.
Okay. Yeah, my family's all from Delhi and Price Hill.
Really? So you know Roselawn then?
I do, yeah.
Okay.
Cincinnati
okay.
style.
All right.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So it's a great place to grow up. And then I've been in Kentucky then for, back in Kentucky, raising my family for the last 25 years.
Wow. Do you make it back to Fort Knox often?
I've been back to Fort Knox for golf tournaments.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, my oldest son plays golf, and he's played in a couple amateur events there at the golf course close to Fort Knox. So I've been back for that reason. And I understand the hospital is closed in the last year or so.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. Yeah,
yeah, so kind of sad.
Yeah. So where did you go to school at?
So I went to school in public and private schools in Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. So my family has Catholic roots, so I went to Catholic schools as an elementary kid and public high school. And actually went through career and technical education as a high school student.
Wow.
And studied at the Cincinnati Zoo, believe it or not.
No way. What did you study there?
So everything animal care and husbandry and, you know, environmental education. So that was a fascinating opportunity and one that allows me, I think, to think deeply about career and technical education today and its meaning for students and relevance in kind of as the bridge from education to the workforce.
Mm, and what was your major? Was it biology or?
It was biology, basically, you know, animal biology, anything that kind of fits into that realm. So even as a going to school in Cincinnati, I was the FFA president.
Oh, nice.
So as I watched the FFA storm the Capitol on occasion, I like to say I'm a proud FFA and former FFA president.
Well, that's awesome. And vital work that they do, without a doubt.
Wonderful work that they do. Mm-hmm. Not only equipping students with a depth of understanding of Kentucky's diversified agricultural economy, but also all the supports that they give to students to equip them to speak about issues that they care about,
sure.
to manage projects and kind of focus on a vision that they have for Kentucky's future. So definitely a wonderful resource for our state.
And so, Bridget, while you were in Cincinnati, you also worked with United Way up there, correct?
I did. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
So what were you doing with United Way?
So United Way of Greater Cincinnati is one of the largest metropolitan United Ways. It serves three states, Ohio, Kentucky, and Indiana.
Oh, wow.
So my work for United Way of Greater Cincinnati, Northern Kentucky, was focused on public policy in the state of Kentucky and early childhood specifically. So United Way's model of community impact, and many of the United Ways in Kentucky have moved to a model of community impact where they're really trying to drive their philanthropic resources to initiatives in the region that they serve that impact long-term growth and support of individuals in the community. So in United Way of Greater Cincinnati, they were focusing at the time on early childhood as a priority. And so in Ohio, Kentucky, and Indiana, we were working at the public policy level as well as the philanthropic level in the region because from the United Way standpoint, public policy was taking community impact to scale.
Mm-hmm.
And we certainly believe that at the Pritchard Committee as well, that there are lots of good things that happen at the local level. And we need to make sure that we're scaling those things up from a policy standpoint to ensure that all of our students across the state of Kentucky, whether it's in early childhood, K-12, or in post-secondary, are benefiting from the best we have to offer.
Yeah, that's a great point. And my next question for you about Cincinnati, and I have to ask you this, Gold Star or Skyline Chili?
Oh boy, now there's a tough question. I think I'm a Skyline girl.
Me too. Definitely. Me too. Yeah. You know, I mean, everybody's entitled to their opinion, but it's always interesting to hear.
Skyline has just a little bit of spice to it that Gold Star doesn't.
It does. It's got a little chocolate in it too. Mm-hmm. It's a Greek chili.
It's all about that chocolate.
Right? It is. But anyways, I'll digress from our chili discussion. So after you were in Cincinnati, you also served on the Board of Education in Pendleton County, correct?
Concurrently.
Oh, you still are?
So I served on the board as an elected Board of Education member in Pendleton County, which is a rural county north of Lexington.
That's where Falmouth,
Kentucky,
right.
the famous flood of 1997. So I served there for 10 years from 1997 to 2007, or I guess 1998 to 2008, roughly. So at the same time that I was working at United Way or thereabouts. So, that was a wonderful opportunity for me. It was during the Carey years in Kentucky. Mm-hmm. So it was an opportunity to kind of see the implementation of the Kentucky Education Reform Act as a local Board of Education member. My children were in early elementary school at the time. And we had a real focus on just increasing student outcomes, establishing educational leadership at the local level, and the board coming together around a clear vision for that rural county.
Cool. That's great. That's great to hear. And, you know, I really like Falmouth a lot. It's a sweet town.
Well, it's a beautiful place on the Licking River. The forks of the Licking, as they say.
Definitely.
So it's a beautiful river. Excellent canoeing and kayaking.
So, Bridget, how did you end up in Lexington? How'd you end up coming down to Central Kentucky?
Well, because of the Pritchard Committee. Mm-hmm. So I left United Way to, and actually, well, I left my local board seat to take a seat on the State Board of Education, and then left United Way of Greater Cincinnati and the State Board of Education to take on a role at the Pritchard Committee.
I see.
First as Associate Executive Director, and then moved into the Executive Director role. So that's what brings me to Lexington.
Cool.
I'm not actually a resident yet, but hope to be a resident in the near future. So I'm trying to figure out which neighborhoods, what vibe the different neighborhoods have.
I understand. Well, we'll be happy to have you.
Great.
Definitely. So where was the first spot you heard about the Pritchard Committee, Bridget? When was the
first
time?
The first time I heard about the Pritchard Committee, it was actually as a local Board of Education member. Mm. So in the late 90s, the Pritchard Committee was establishing the Governor's Parent Leadership Institute. Mm-hmm. And I applied to be a participant of the Institute, went through that process in 1999, 2000, mm-hmm. Became a fellow of the Institute. So the Institute has been for 20 years training parents to better understand what they can and should expect of their local school and how they can get more deeply involved, and to better understand the structure of accountability that exists in the state of Kentucky. Mm-hmm. So I went through that process, and it supported my work as a local Board of Education member and supported me as a parent, not only with my children, but my children's peers. And that's how I learned of the Pritchard Committee initially.
That's cool. And so for people that don't know and are listening, you know, can you explain a little bit what is the Pritchard Committee and kind of what is the functionality of the organization?
So the Pritchard Committee is a longstanding group of citizens who came together in the early 1980s to look at issues of education in Kentucky. Mm-hmm. They initially came together They initially came together to look at post-secondary education, and they came together as a Blue Ribbon Commission to look at quality in post-secondary and how Kentucky might increase the quality of our post-secondary attainment. Mm-hmm. So after that work was complete and a report was done and it was lauded by the media but put on the shelf largely, they asked themselves, if we're going to increase the quality of post-secondary education, what do we need to do next? And the answer was, we need to start focusing on K-12 education. And at the time, Kentucky ranked at the bottom of all of the national rankings in education. Kind of the saying in Kentucky was, thank goodness for Mississippi.
Wow.
And you hear that across the southern states. Mm-hmm. But we were at the bottom of the national rankings. And so members of the committee and Bob Sexton, who was the founding executive director at the time, they started to take data out across the state and to raise awareness among citizens about the level of education in Kentucky and to instill a desire and inspire a belief that we could do better. Mm. We could do better for ourselves and we could do better for our students. And so by doing that, they built a groundswell that then later led to the passage of the Kentucky Education Reform Act, which was monumental. At the time, it established an accountability structure in the state, which was brand new, and it established a standards-based reform, which means that all schools and districts across the state of Kentucky would be held to the same standards. And before that time, that wasn't the case. So once the Reform Act was passed, a parent in eastern Kentucky and a parent in western Kentucky, a parent in northern Kentucky and in central Kentucky could all expect that their students would be held to the same standard of education. And so as a state, we really came together to invest in education and to ensure that we were delivering a higher quality of education in the state. As a result, we're happy to say today that from 1990 or from the mid-1980s until now, we've come from the bottom of the national rankings to the middle and even above on some indicators.
Wow.
So it's been a large success story, and it's a tribute to policymakers of the time and citizens across the state who felt a sense of urgency to do better for our students and to do better for our state.
That's amazing, and I'm happy as a product of that legislation. You know, I'm very happy that the Pritchard Committee hopped in and was created to make that happen, because, you know, it's better for everyone involved.
That's right, that's right.
And certainly, you know, and we'll get into this a little bit more later, but it sounds like, you know, the educational policies and reforms here in Kentucky are constantly evolving and have even evolved quite a bit this year. So I want to ask you a little bit about that, but first, a little bit more about the Pritchard Committee. Can you let us know kind of how many people are on the staff, or how many people make up the Pritchard Committee? Are there volunteers?
Sure. So we have 9 staff members, but the committee itself is made up of up to 125 individuals across the state. Currently, we have 112 members.
Wow.
Some of them are founding members from 1983, and others have joined us in more recent years. So 112 members across the state with a small staff here in Lexington. Wow. 9 of us and a few consultants as well.
Wow. And there's also the student voice team, correct?
Yes.
Can you explain to people kind of what that is?
Sure. So just in the last 5 years, we've added something at the Pritchard Committee called the student voice team. And they are students currently in Kentucky high schools and middle schools who have come together with a desire to better understand education, the role of policy in education, and the role that they can play to lift student voice in their schools and in their districts to enhance the quality of education. They've done just an amazing job coming together, thinking through issues, and encouraging themselves and their peers to speak out, to let teachers, to let principals, to let policymakers know what they need and what they desire out of the education today. So it's a voice that I believe we were missing 25 years ago, and it's one that I'm very proud to be part of the Pritchard Committee today, and one that we hope to keep kind of nurturing and building in naturally as part of the way we discuss education and our future in the state.
Certainly, it seems to make sense to have the kids that are in the middle of it at the table to talk about how things can be improved. And we have a show on WLXU as well on Sundays, Revolutionary Radio, with Sam Swayze and Evan, who, you know, they're members of the student voice team. So it's amazing to hear their ideas and just how far along they already are in conceptualizing how their education can be better while still in it.
That's right.
It's amazing the work that they do.
They are a voice to listen to, no doubt.
So, Bridget, I want to ask you, you know, just, I know we talked a little bit about this, but, you know, how do you feel, what is the current state of education in Kentucky? And, you know, how do we pair up nationally with other states?
Well, we've come again from, in a quarter century, we've come from the bottom to roughly the middle and even above. So there are some indicators where we're really doing well relative to other states in the nation. So in fourth grade reading, we're 8th in the nation. But if we look behind that ranking relative to other states, what we see is still there are roughly half of our third and fourth graders who are not reading at grade level. So we need to look at relative rankings across the nation, but we also just need to look at how we're doing against ourselves in the state of Kentucky. Math is another area where we don't see the same growth that we'd like to see. So in eighth grade math in the state of Kentucky, we're 39th in the nation. So we have a lot of work to do in mathematics. So we have some really great bright spots. Graduation is another really strong bright spot for us. 86% of Kentucky's high schoolers are graduating from high school, which is a wonderful statistic. It's one of the top in the nation. But we also now are at a point in time where we need to not only look at whether or not kids are graduating from high school, but when they graduate, are they ready for their next step? Because we know that kids need something after high school to be able to achieve a family-sustaining wage. They need some type of marketable skill that they receive in college, some type of college training or education after high school. So are they ready? So when we look at our current measure of college and career readiness, we're a little below 70%, so maybe 68% in the state. So we have a ways to go before we kind of, before there's parity between college and career readiness and high school graduation. And that's a critical part of our work going forward.
Oh, and so does the Pritchard Committee's work, is it mostly with the Department of Education, or are you working directly with high schools and colleges?
We work directly with policymakers in Frankfurt, and we also seek to work more directly with local citizens. So we partner and seek to partner with high schools and elementary schools as we think about policy issues. But we really want to mobilize citizens in their communities because we need citizens to partner with local schools and local districts to help realize these outcomes for our students. So we're not in an era anymore where the type of education that all of our students need can be gained in from 8 to 3 o'clock during a part-time school schedule across the year. So we need our communities to come together and support kids towards those goals.
It's great. Started at the ground level. It's important.
That's right. That's right.
So, Bridget, what have been some of the successes of the Pritchard Committee since its founding in 1983?
Well, definitely the passage of the Kentucky Education Reform Act in 1990. I think some of the work that was done prior to the Kentucky Education Reform Act, the early work of the committee around post-secondary, you see some of that work borne out in the 1997 higher ed reforms. So we would count that as a win. The Governor's Commonwealth Leadership, Parent Leadership Institute is definitely something that has resonated across the state. Parents have appreciated and other community leaders have appreciated what the committee has offered there to increase understanding of education. The Student Voice Team, most recently, something that we count as a big success. And then early childhood has been something we've really been focusing on the last 10 to 15 years, deepening our investment in the state in early childhood so that we are beginning to support early learners at the earliest stage so that achievement gaps don't show up in kindergarten, and we're beginning to close them or narrow them before they ever have a chance to widen.
That's awesome. That's great to hear. And, you know, I want to ask you kind of currently, what is the Pritchard Committee working on? Are there any issues that are facing the state right now that are taking priority in your work?
I think the biggest priority as we look at the success of Kentucky's success in education over the last quarter century, we see that we've come to kind of a midway point. If we've come from the bottom to the middle, we want to strive to come even closer to the top of the national rankings in education. So how do we do that? We need to double down on increasing the performance of all of our students and ensuring that the relevance and the rigor is there for them to achieve their highest potential. But then we also need to double down on closing achievement gaps in the state of Kentucky, and we need to do those two things simultaneously. So recently we've released a report that looks at the achievement gap and recognizes that while we've made great gains for all students across the state of Kentucky since 1990 and before, we still see significant gaps between low-income students in our state, African-American students, students of color, students with learning differences, and middle-income, and their middle-income and white peers.
For sure.
So we need to close, we need to narrow and close those gaps if we're going to move Kentucky ever closer to the top tier of all states across the nation.
Do you all have any suggestions or ideas on how we can close those gaps?
We need to double down on early childhood, again, to close gaps before they ever start so that students are really ready with all the supports necessary, both cognitive as well as developmental, when they enter kindergarten. We need bold leadership at the local level that has high expectations for all students and provides the right supports for students to mm-hmm. achieve their potential. Mm-hmm. We need a strong accountability system at the state level and at the local level. And so as we think about accountability, we think of the accountability structure at the state level, mm-hmm. but we also think of public accountability. So as we report out to the public, that reporting needs to be something that the public can consume, mm-hmm. can understand, and can do something with. So again, to our community organizations and simply our neighborhoods, how can people engage with the schools and with our districts to support students along the way? Mm-hmm. We can't leave this work simply up to our school districts any longer. So accountability goes two ways. It's both public accountability and it's state-level accountability.
Mm. It starts with us.
It starts with all of us. That's mm-hmm. right. That's right. It's Everybody's Business is actually the title of our Achievement Gap Report.
That's a great title.
That's right. It's true. It is Everybody's Business. And that's what we hope to achieve as we go forward on behalf of the Pritchard Committee, is really instilling that belief that it is everybody's business. And it is time for us to come together once again to support all learners.
You know, I think that's a great point, Bridget. And, you know, you yourself, you sat on the Kentucky Board of Education for 6 years, correct?
That's right.
And mm-hmm. so when you were there, you know, you were involved on that, you know, that local level initially in Pendleton County and then went up to the full board of the state of Kentucky. So can you explain to us and for people listening, you know, what does the Kentucky Board of Education do exactly? Its functionality.
Sure. So the Kentucky Board of Education is a body of 11 members mm-hmm. appointed by the governor. Mm-hmm. They set policy for the state with mm-hmm. respect to education. So oftentimes that will mean when legislation is passed, there are details in the legislation that need to be fleshed out by the State Board of Education and the Department of Education. Mm-hmm. And that happens at the state board table with the State Commissioner of Education. So our current state commissioner is Dr. Stephen Pruitt. And the board also hires the Commissioner of Education.
Mm. Interesting. Cool. Thank you for clarifying that.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, within the state of Kentucky, you know, we have so many counties, as you all know. So does the state of education, I know there are generalized standards amongst county by county, but do you see the test results and do you see disadvantaged students differing greatly between county to county across the state of Kentucky?
We do see differences from county to county across the state. Mm-hmm. You know, in eastern Kentucky, we're going to clearly see differences because mm-hmm. of socioeconomics compared to what we see in Louisville. Mm-hmm. But we still, Kentucky is a high poverty state. So mm-hmm. poverty is something that is universal across our state. Mm-hmm. And the barriers experienced because of poverty are something that are relatively universal. Mm-hmm. Then with ethnicity, issues, differences between race, mm-hmm. we're going to see more of that, obviously, in Louisville and in some of the urban pockets. Mm-hmm. In the Bowling Green Warren County area, we have a lot of English language learners, mm-hmm. And there are specific issues there that we need to be able to handle to ensure those learners are reaching their potential.
Certainly. And the reason I asked that is because I wondered if there was a direct correlation between how wealthy a county is connected to how well its students are doing it at schools. You know, is if there's a correlation between how richly funded the school is, if that's directly connected to the students doing well, or are there examples of poor counties in Kentucky where, you know, low income students are still doing well because the school is funded from state resources? Or
I think that's a great point. Floyd County is a kind of a highlight mm-hmm. that we've been focusing on the last few years. Mm-hmm. So Floyd County, very poor, but they've done incredible work for students mm-hmm. over the last few years. Mm-hmm. They've risen to kind of the top ranking across the state for student outcomes. And I think they attribute that to kind of a high expectations, no excuses mentality. Mm-hmm. We're going to do whatever it takes to help these kids achieve at high levels. Mm-hmm. So I think there is a lot to be said for leadership, again, bold leadership at the local level. There's a lot to be said for instruction, which is another key component. It's all about teaching and learning in the classroom. Mm-hmm. There's a lot to be said for school climate and culture. So what is the climate and culture that really supports students in their environment and honors the culture from which they come? Mm. And so that culture is going to be different in the west end of Louisville compared to eastern Kentucky. So we have a lot lot of work, I think, to do in the state around climate and culture. Mm. An area where I would say there are real differences between wealthier areas of the state and poorer areas of the state is opportunity and access. Mm. So if we think about one of the things we need to do in high school, which I believe is more relevant education around career pathways. Mm. So students, I think, are hungry for exposure to career opportunities much earlier. They want to know what's out there for them, and they want to start applying their knowledge to real-world experiences. And that requires a whole different level of education in our classrooms. It requires different expertise. It requires different programming and pathways in our high schools. And so I think it's easier for urban areas to provide that level of education than mm-hmm. it is for rural areas. There is an expense, but we also need to think about partnerships, business partnerships, community partnerships to be able to provide those. But there's still a cost, I think, to that rich opportunity and access that we don't want to discount when it comes to rural areas.
For sure. And I think even here in Lexington, you know, as two examples of that, one is the one that we're in right now, the STEAM Academy, which is a high school that UK started 4 or 5 years ago, you know, which is STEM related. And so every student here has their own home high school, but they come here for that specific, you know, track, whether it's science, technology, engineering, arts, or math, you know, and they can focus on that, and they can pair with other organizations here in Lexington, because we have such a plethora of companies here that students can come and intern with and learn more about and get practical skills, you know, Lexington Community Radio included in that. And, you know, we also see with Bryan Station, which is they're changing their whole high school to be academies. And so a big part of that is the IT Academy, which we have some interns that work here with us as well. So, you know, you can see that here in Lexington, but I think that's an interesting point that rural counties shouldn't be neglected, even for lack of partnerships.
Right. You know? Or you have SCAPA here in Lexington. Mm-hmm,
exactly.
Right? So there is an opportunity in an urban area for there to be a lot of diversity in the delivery of education. And there just isn't that same opportunity in rural areas. Mm. We need to figure out how to build that into rural areas.
Definitely. That's great. And so for folks that are just joining us, we're talking with Bridget Ramsey, the executive director of the Pritchard Committee for Academic Excellence. And if y'all don't mind, we're going to take a quick little break. We'll be back in a little bit. You're listening to Bluegrass Bios here on 93.9 WLXU LPFM, Lexington Community Radio. Hey, everybody, and we're back. You're listening to Bluegrass Bios here on 93.9 WLXU FM, Lexington Community Radio. And we're here in the studio with Pritchard Ramsey, who is the executive director of the Pritchard Committee for Academic Excellence. Thanks again for coming in and talking to us.
My pleasure, Chuck. Thank you.
And so we're talking about the state of public education here in the state of Kentucky. And one thing that's been pretty large in the news here lately is that this year, Kentucky became the 44th state to embrace charter schools in the
That's
United
right.
States. And so, you know, what exactly does that mean for people that don't know, embracing charter schools? What happened this year in the legislature?
So this year, the General Assembly passed a law that allows for charter schools in the state of Kentucky. And as you mentioned, we're the 45th state, if we include the District of Columbia, that has now adopted charter-enabling legislation.
Wow.
So the first legislation was passed in 1991, I believe, mm-hmm. In Missouri. Or was it Minnesota? Anyway, the first legislation was passed in 1991, and so many states have adopted charter-enabling legislation mm-hmm. since that time, and Kentucky's now the 45th. The legislation had been batted around in the General Assembly for the last few years, mm-hmm. so there was a fair amount of time for legislators and policymakers to discuss the idea. Mm-hmm. There were strong opinions on both sides about whether or not Kentucky needed charter schools. Across the nation, charters have been adopted to increase innovation in education and to provide specific programming that fits certain students' needs. It's also been championed as a model to help close achievement gaps in mm-hmm. some states, and there have been some success stories as well. So there was a specific interest in Louisville for charter schools, and that kind of grew over time to a larger support, and the legislation passed then in this last session of the General Assembly.
Wow, and so what is the main difference between a public school and a charter school? And a public charter school, because I hear of all three, but what is the difference between them?
So a public charter school is under the guise of the public education mm-hmm. system in the state, and that will be Kentucky's model. Mm-hmm. Charter schools could be private schools, not so much under that umbrella with separate kind of authorizing authority and those sorts of things. Mm-hmm. But under Kentucky's model, they're definitely public charter schools. Mm-hmm. So they're under the authority of the State Board of Education. And under Kentucky's law, there will be a preference for local school boards authorizing charter schools.
I see.
So there can also be an appeal to the State Board of Education to mm-hmm. authorize charter schools, mm-hmm. but the first conversation needs to happen at the local district level. So in Fayette County, that would be a charter applicant coming to the Fayette County Board of Education mm-hmm. with an idea, with a proposal, and the Fayette County Board entertaining that proposal.
I see. And now with the creation of public charter schools, you know, were there a lot of examples of charter schools and public schools collaborating in the past and working together? Or are they kind of isolated from each other?
Well, that's interesting. So over time, I think initially charters were thought to be an innovative model. But over time, I think they grew to be thought of as competition mm-hmm. to public schools. And they've been held up at times as healthy competition for public schools. Mm. What we see across the nation over time is a real emphasis on collaboration between districts and charters. Mm. So that's important to us because we feel like that's where we in Kentucky need to start, is with a framework and a mindset of collaboration. Mm. So if a local district, Fayette County School Board, is going to authorize a charter, it should be done with collaboration in mind, and that charter should be established to fulfill certain needs in the district that maybe aren't being fulfilled for students at the moment. Mm. So it should be something in addition, an alternative that's needed by students, and therefore just part of a collaboration among all the schools in the district. What we see nationally is in places that have had charters for a long time, mm-hmm. they're establishing collaborative agreements now. So they're actually going back and starting to build those collaborations. We need to start there in Kentucky and not get caught up in competition, but start from a mindset of collaboration, which in my read of things is the way Kentucky has always worked.
Yeah, we are a land of dichotomies, no doubt about that. Too far north to be south, too far south to be north. So, you know, that's interesting to talk about collaborations. And I was curious, you know, with any legislation, there's going to be some discussion. So before this passed, you know, what was the divided argument? What were the pro-charter schools and anti-charter school? What was that discussion?
I think the discussion was really whether or not charter schools were needed. Mm-hmm. So do we need to add a layer of complexity to mm-hmm. Kentucky's system of public schools?
Yeah.
And there are those who felt that we needed to add a layer of complexity. We need alternatives. Mm-hmm. And there are those who felt strongly that we didn't, and we need to double down on increasing the quality of our public schools, mm-hmm. particularly in areas where we have low performing schools. Our focus at the Pritchard Committee is on ensuring that all of our students have access to high quality learning environments, mm. have access to good schools. And what does a good school look like? So I think what we see through the legislative session was just that simple divide in philosophy about whether or not this alternative would be helpful mm. in lifting student outcomes.
Yeah.
And so now that the legislation has passed, it's important that we move forward with a mindset of collaboration and mm-hmm. embrace this new tool in the toolbox, if you will,
yeah.
As a strategy to help us do just that, to lift student outcomes and close achievement gaps.
That's great. And I think that's a good approach, you know, since we're here where we are. So I wanted to ask you, with charter schools, you know, what are some opportunities for expansion and growth that you don't get with normal public schools? But what are also some threats that come with that?
I think when we think about expansion and growth, again, it's back to this, what might we what might an alternative model provide in an area like Fayette County or Jefferson County? So are there models nationally, or are there some innovative thoughts that are worth our consideration? Again, all with a mindset of increasing student outcomes and closing achievement gaps. Mm-hmm. And we should entertain those alternative thoughts, those innovative models, if they have a good track record, or the individual leading them has a good track record of results for students. So there may be things in the area, again, of career pathways, rich and rigorous academic programs with character components, climate and culture. So models that that have strong climate and culture models that are beneficial for some groups of students. So I think if we entertain those, that's where the expansion may come in. And if we're entering into this thought process, again, from a collaborative standpoint, what can we learn from those things in Kentucky? If we adopt some charters in some areas of the state, what can we learn from that that then spills over to other public schools in the state? So
yeah, and I think those are all great points. And as far as threats go, you know, I'm curious, just because the folks who are running charter schools can be anyone. They can be a for-profit entity, they can be nonprofit, as you said. So, you know, but they have to have some track record that they've improved. You know, they've worked with children before, and they're successful educators. So I was just wondering if, you know, there's any, I guess, fear that any corporations or individuals might unfairly financially benefit from the charter school system, if that was part of the discussion, or if that's a fair threat.
That was definitely part of, we did hear those things come up in the legislative discussion, and we've heard them come up since that time. And I think it's definitely something for us to be mindful of in the state of Kentucky. I don't think we want to be in a place where anybody is profiting from the education of Kentucky's students.
Definitely.
We want to ensure integrity of our education system. And so a lot of that, I think, is going to be spelled out as we look at the regulation that's now being vetted by the Department of Education, and as we look at the authorizing process. So by that I mean, what does the negotiation look like around a contract between a local board of education and a charter applicant? And so do are our boards equipped to authorize high quality charters? So the threat would be that we end up with low quality charter schools in the state of Kentucky with innovative models that have no track record of success and don't result in a high quality program for our students. And that could be a detriment to our trajectory forward in education across the state. And we've seen that happen in other states. So I think it's important that Kentucky be mindful of best practices nationally. If we're the 45th state in the nation, including DC, to adopt charter enabling legislation, we need to benefit from best practices that have been learned over a period of time. And it's going to be all about quality and collaboration.
Yeah, and I think learning also from what other states have done. You know, so I wanted to ask you, kind of as the executive director of the Pritchard Committee, you know, what other states have done? You know, have there been mostly successes or mostly failures? Or what are some examples of how charter schools have been handled into coming into the public system in other states in the U.S.?
So Massachusetts is a great example, Boston in particular, of a state that has implemented charter schools alongside of public schools. And where they have been able to show real returns for students because of those charter schools. They've begun to narrow achievement gaps, serve populations of students who had previously been left behind in real and measurable ways. So Massachusetts, Boston in particular, is a place for us to look. Ohio, unfortunately, is a place that kind of adopted a let a thousand flowers bloom mindset when it came to charters, and they've struggled then to rein in quality. And I don't think we want to let that happen in Kentucky, and we want to be cautious that we don't allow that to happen, that we do focus on quality. Denver, Colorado is another area that they have really focused on collaboration between charters and public charters and district schools, and that is serving them well.
Cool. that's great to hear. You know, I'm really curious to see how it's going to go down. And for the Pritchard Committee and for you, Bridget, what do you see as a good system, a solid system that keeps schools accountable?
I think for us, it's important that, one, we're continuing to measure year after year, even if we add complexity to our system with the addition of public charter schools. Year over year, are we increasing student outcomes and are we narrowing the gaps between different populations of students? Mm-hmm. And are we moving Kentucky up the national rankings for education? Are we educating our students in a way that they will be ready for the future in the 21st century economy? Mm. And so, I think that's what we have to keep our eye focused on,
sure.
Regardless of what we add to the toolbox. Mm-hmm. If we keep our eye focused on the end goal of all students achieving their highest potential, being active and productive citizens of our state, then I think we'll make the right decisions as we move forward.
And so do you feel like if there were a charter school that got started, it wasn't doing a very good job and the students were performing not as well as they could, do you think it's going to be harder to close a charter school than it would be to reprimand a public school, since we're dealing with a corporation or a non-for-profit corporation?
Well, again, that will be spelled out in the, there is some language in the law that speaks to renewal and closure and the need for a public charter to show clear gains mm-hmm. based on the outcomes that were negotiated in their contract. Mm-hmm. And if they don't make clear gains on those outcomes, then their application, their proposal would not be renewed. Mm. And I think there's a 5-year window on that. So, but it's also going to be important what happens in the regulation. So the details in the regulation around renewal and closure. So how is it automatic? Is it set out in the contract initially that these gains need to be made? And if they're not, it's automatic closure? Mm. Or is it up to a negotiation process and discussion around what the gains actually were or were not? And so I think it's important that that is clearly spelled out in the regulatory process. And we'll be looking for that actually at the State Board of Education this week, where they'll have a first read of the regulations.
Wow.
So that's going to be important. But I think a really important point is that it needs to be easy to close a charter down mm-hmm. because the whole reason for bringing charters into the state is that they can bring something to to student outcomes that we haven't been able to bring already. So they need to achieve at a higher level for our students. And if they're not achieving at a higher level, getting more impact for our students, then they do need to be closed. And we need to entertain a model that will work.
Well, I'm so glad that the Pritchard Committee's out there, you know, keeping their feet to the fire. And certainly, and you know, thank you so much for coming in, Bridget. I really appreciated this conversation. I've learned a lot about charter schools that, you know, I didn't know before. And my last question I want to ask you is, if there's anyone out there, whether it's a student, whether it's a PTA member, a parent, or just someone who's excited about education and education reform in Kentucky, what is the best way that they can get involved in the process or maybe in the discussion of these regulations of charter schools? How would you recommend to them to get involved?
Well, I would definitely check out our website, PritchardCommittee.org, and you can contact us via that website. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter. So please reach out to us and we'll find ways to connect you. For the charter regulations specifically, you can look at the Kentucky Department of Education and the Kentucky Board of Education's website for mm-hmm. those regulations online right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I would just encourage people to talk among your community, to talk first and foremost about what we want for our students. What do we aspire for our students today and mm-hmm. for the future? Mm-hmm. And how are we going to achieve that? And how are we all going to come together with open minds to achieve our highest aspirations for our students?
That's great. Well, it's a noble cause, no doubt about it. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you, Jack.
Bridget Pelham Ramsey, the Executive Director of the Pritchard Committee for Academic Excellence. Thank you so much for coming in. We really appreciate it. And
thank you.
Good luck in Frankfurt out there.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.